out of adversity, something else has happened. So now, instead of just educating the MS community, I educate internationally of what it's like to live with a disability, what it's like to come through having adversities, and how to thrive. Because my number one motto that I live by is time is the most precious commodity. You cannot buy it, sell it, reuse it, borrow it, or steal it. So be careful on what you spend it on and who you spend it on. Are you procrastinating? Are you in the wrong tribe? If you are, you and only you have the ability to change. You cannot wait for someone else to do it for you.
Are you stuck in a bit of a rut, feeling like you've been dealt a raw hand? Are you struggling to move on, deal with, or let go of a challenge that you might be facing in your life? Maybe it's your health, a relationship, or perhaps some other hurdle that just seems unfair. Or do you need a little boost of inspiration and joy? Maybe to kick you in the pants and get your butt moving forward. Well, look no further, friends, because this episode of Connectedly is a doozy. Hi, I'm Nicole Sharanum, and in this profound conversation, Justine Martin, a Geelong, Victoria-based resilience coach, shares her transformative journey from a multiple sclerosis diagnosis in 2011 to becoming the happiest and healthiest she's ever been. Despite facing MS, three primary cancers, heart conditions, and chronic pain, as well as numerous other hurdles, Justine has not only found strength and a new purpose in life, but she does it with a huge smile on her face and blazing love in her heart. Justine discusses the importance of resilience, humour, and asking for help as tools to navigate adversities. Now an artist, author, and international speaker, Justine has seven businesses after being told she would never work again, and won Geelong's Business Leader of the Year. We talk about her innovative approach to coping mechanisms, the significance of self-care, acceptance, and the power of living one's authentic self. Justine's story is a compelling testament to the human spirit's ability to bounce back and find happiness, and not just amidst life's challenges, but because of them. So please sit down, grab a cuppa, and join me for this beautiful testament to life's gifts. Hi, Justine. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
We were just having a sneaky little conversation about glasses then, weren't we?
We were.
I was getting all the secrets to the best places for glasses and frames, and we could have gone on for hours.
But we're at that age now, aren't we? You know.
I think so.
You hit a certain age, then all of a sudden it's like, oh, everyone my age is wearing glasses. Have a look around all your friends and see how many of us are wearing glasses. I used to brag that I was the only one left in my family not wearing glasses, but I can't say that now.
We're all wearing them. I've always had fantastic vision, and now suddenly here I am, but I'm embracing it. I'm absolutely loving the fact that it's a new thing, you know.
Loving the fact I can see.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you here, Justine. And I would love, as a little introduction, for you please to share kind of a little bit about who you are, but more than that, like what has shaped you into who you are today?
Oh, wow. Okay. Well, I'm Justine Martin and I'm from Geelong, Victoria. I'm a disabled woman. I was diagnosed with MS in 2011. Actually, it was my anniversary last week. And that's a bittersweet moment. So is it an anniversary on celebrating that I got MS? Because it actually changed my life. And I don't want to say like for the better, in a lot of ways it did. Even though I live with, you know, my disabilities, my life took on totally different meaning, and for the better in that regard. And I recently commented to my neurologist that I'm the happiest and the healthiest that I've ever been in my whole entire life, despite having gone through, you know, three primary cancers and three heart conditions. And, you know, I live with chronic pain every day. But mentally, I'm the strongest that I've ever been. And although physically some days are really bad, I'm not going to swear on this podcast. I'm still in a really, really good place financially. I now run 7 businesses after I was told by a medical professional here in Perth, because I'm recording from Perth today because I'm away working, that I would never be able to work again. And then last year won Geelong's Business Leader of the Year. So I've reinvented myself in the past 13 years. I went down that black hole. I really couldn't have got much further down. I did have suicidal thoughts back in 2011, 2012. I no longer have suicidal thoughts. I very rarely now have even slipped back into depression. I'm well aware of all the signs and am able to stop myself going back on that because I have strategic things put in place so I don't slip back into depression. And all round, I'm in a very, very happy place in life. So I'm now an artist, an author, a publisher, a keynote international speaker, a publisher, a manager, the list just goes on. A grandma of 7, you know, what's not to like about life?
Wow. You are a total inspiration. And you know, I get visuals when people talk. And one of the visuals that I had when you were talking, besides the fact that I broke out in goosebumps, was a canvas and a masterpiece, and just seeing all these different strokes that have been applied to your canvas and the beauty that has resulted. I'm actually getting really emotional as I say this.
But say that, Nicole. Sorry to interrupt, but I'm actually entering the Archibald this year again. So this will be the second time I've entered it. And I'm painting a portrait of me with all my hidden disabilities and everything that I've actually been through. So look out in the next month, because the entries have to be in by the beginning of May. And that's what I'm going to do, is to bring more awareness. And I'm all about bringing awareness of hidden disabilities and the hidden struggles and everything that people go through in everyday lives, because I look normal, whatever normal actually is. People don't realize that I'm actually disabled until I turn around and say that, oh yeah, I'm disabled. And they're like, what? And I'm like, well, I've got cognitive impairment and I suffer with really bad nerve pain that affects my mobility at times. So that in itself is a disability. All right. So not looking disabled is a disability in itself, because I'm always having to explain myself. Whereas when I walk with my walking stick, or I'm in my walking my wheelchair or my Alinka walker, people don't ask. I don't have to justify then being disabled. But I get out of a car park, a disabled car park, and there'll be some grumpy person telling me that I shouldn't be parking there because I don't look disabled. So I have to then prove that I'm there. My response is, hey, mate, I've got MS. You can have my car park, but it's a package deal. It comes with the MS, you get up to have it as well, kind of thing. So, and when I'm up, you know, doing my keynotes and I'm talking about, you know, my disabilities and my journey and everything that I've been through, I use humor, because trauma and humor help the mind adapt, and especially the audience sitting there that will either be going through some form of trauma themselves or have a family member that's going through it. So if I can lighten up the subject a little bit, it makes it a little bit easier for people to cope.
Mm. And I guess that translates to your own life, that if you have humour within your own life, it helps your own, you know, to lighten up a bit.
Definitely.
And I'd love to know, I mean, there's so many things I want to talk to you about. I mean, you talk about resilience. What is resilience, and what is required to be resilient?
So resilient, I recently went to a seminar, and, you know, I always thought about resilience as bouncing back, but it is, but it's also bouncing forward. The ability to bounce forward after an adversity, to come back and to come back stronger than what you have before. But there's no timeline on that either. Like, when you're diagnosed with something, it doesn't mean, or you have an adversity in your life, doesn't have to mean that you've been diagnosed with something. You might break a leg or you've been through some form of adversity. It doesn't mean that you wake up the next day and it's like, okay, I'm going to bounce forward now. It doesn't happen like that. It just means that you've got coping mechanisms put in place already in your life that help you then cope with what you're going through. So instead of it taking you 12 months to come back from that adversity, it might take you 6 months, or it might take you 3 months, or it might take you a week instead of a month. So having those coping mechanisms put in place. Also recognizing, you know, the feelings that you've got, having not just physical health, but mental health as well. And here's a question back for you, Nicole. Is resilience learned, or is it something that we're born with?
Gosh. I would say a bit of both, not to sideswipe the question, but I kind of feel like it's a bit of both. I feel like we have to continually teach ourselves, because there might be something that's innate in us, but if we don't practice it and continually learn more about it, we just leave it behind, right?
Yeah, that's right. I mean,
an
example of resilience, are we born with it, is that we all learn how to walk. Now, no one tells us to get up really and walk. You know, we learn to crawl. You know, we start rocking and then we take one step and then we learn that's being resilient. Then, you know, we climb up onto, hold ourselves on the furniture and we take one step and we fall down. But we get back up again. But we don't walk straight away either. But we try again and we try again until we start walking. And that's being resilient. That's trying and trying and trying again. So that's on a cellular level, as an act of survival. Right, that we've had to learn how to walk in order to survive. We've had to get up and we've had to do it, and it's on a cellular level. But then we have stuff that we learn, and we learn that from our peers, from our family, from our teachers, from our friends. So we are the sum of the five people that we're hanging around. So if you're hanging around with people that are not very positive and not very resilient, chances are you won't be either. If your tribe is not very resilient, you're not going to be resilient in yourself, because they'll probably be knocking you down, or you've never learned it. Doesn't mean that you can't, because you can change everything that you've learned. You can relearn new processes. And there is no hotter topic at the moment than being resilient. It's a hot topic right across the world, and that came about with COVID, through COVID. And although COVID, the pandemic as such has ended, you don't hear so much about it now in the media, the repercussions of it are still out there in the community. And so being resilient and putting yourself back out there and bouncing forward from it is more prevalent today than what it was 4 years ago.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And I guess that leads me to my next question, you know. There's many people out there that don't necessarily, you know, you've been through it, right? You've been through, you've said cancers, MS diagnosis, you've, you know, you've got hit rock bottom with depression. There's lots of people that haven't had those things thrown at them, but they still feel really beaten down. And it could just be from COVID alone. You know, how do they find these coping mechanisms that they need to lift themselves up? Because, I mean, some people don't have the tribe.
No, so that's where I come into play. They employ people like me as a resilience coach. I'm getting a plug in there, Nicole. I have a saying that asking for help is always a sign of strength, never a sign of weakness. And we see in our culture that if you ask for help, you have failed. And that's not the case. You cannot build resilience without asking for help. So your first port of call could be going to your doctor and getting a mental health care plan done in Australia, and then booking in to see a counsellor or a psychologist or a psychiatrist, depending on the degree of what your mental health is actually at. Pick up the phone call and call Beyond Blue or Lifeline. we have free services that you can pick up the phone and call. If you want to work with a coach, I am a resilience coach. I will help you put the strategies in place with that. Come to one of my workshops, come to one of my keynote talks, because I brush on all of this all the time. Listen to my podcast, Resilience Mindset, as well, because we talk about these things. The internet is a great source of information as well. You can find a lot of things on resilience online. There, I've got a YouTube channel as well. There's plenty of stuff on there. Sign up to my newsletter. I'm getting plenty of plugs in here. This is why.
Oh my gosh! This is why you do all this.
Leader of the year.
Yeah. But I mean, you're doing so much, you know. And I'm a driven woman, and I feel like I do a lot. But then I had a look at your website just before we jumped on, just to kind of refresh myself.
Right.
What's that?
I've got 5 websites. Which one were you on?
5 websites. Oh my gosh. I looked at 2 of them and I looked at your like award section and I was like mind blown.
Yeah. Yeah. Some would say I'm an overachiever. Some would say I'm
like, do you ever stop?
Well, I was having this chat to a woman at the conference on Saturday because I just went to the Professional Speakers Australian Connect conference. And she goes, you do so much. How do you do it? I can't do any of that. And I'm like, yeah, but you gotta realize, you know, my kids are grown up. I've got a 27-year-old and a 31-year-old. Well, they're nearly that age. And, you know, I've got 7 grandkids, which come around once a fortnight. 4 of them do. They've got their own room. Because of my disabilities, I don't do my own house cleaning. Be careful what you wish for in this life, Nicole, is all I'm going to say, because I thought I'd make it in life when I got my own house cleaner and my own gardener. Now I have both an NDIS pay for them. So, you know, when you put your goals out there, be really specific. I was not quite specific enough. I had to become disabled to get those. But that frees up my time. Someone does my ironing for me. You know, someone does my washing for me. I only have so much energy. The majority of my work, believe it or not, is done on the lounge with my feet up in front of the computer. You know, I consult on Zoom. I do webinars on Zoom. I'm sitting here in Perth at the moment talking to you at a girlfriend's place, and it's a mixture of work and Zoom. So, and some face-to-face. I've got a workshop to do tomorrow. It's 3 hours. That's my work day tomorrow is 3 hours. So I've found the balance that works for me. I also ask for more help. So because of my cognitive impairment, I have someone that helps me. I've got a VA. So when she started, she was doing 40 hours a month. She now does 100 hours a month. Big difference. So remember what I said, asking for help is a sign of strength. So for me, it's like, okay, well, I can, and I'm just going to pick a figure out. This is not what I earn per hour. Say I earn $200 an hour. All right. Now, am I better off sitting there trying to work out how to create a website, which I can do? I did my first one and it took me 3 months of tears and frustration and a lot of time to do it. Trying to learn how to do things, or am I better off paying my VA to do it? And she works in the Philippines. She's lovely. Keeping the world economy going, right? Paying her amount, which is she gets around $15 an hour plus bonuses to do that. And I go out and make my money at $200. And then that money I can put back into the business and other stuff and help more people. It's a no-brainer for
smart.
People are very scared of letting go of the rein. Oh, I've got to control it all. I've got to do it all myself. No, you'll never get anywhere in life. And that's the same with things in your own personal life. And they're things that you could be outsourcing around your house. You know, if you've got like clutter in your house, you know, if you've got rooms or is your whole house need decluttering, well, there's people that can come in and help you do that. It might cost you a couple of $100, you know, just focus on one room to start with. Oh, I need help. I needed help with my office. My office was a complete and utter shambles. And I'd walk in there and it was so overwhelming. This is going back, probably about 5 years ago now. And it was so overwhelming and I couldn't get anything done and I wasn't being time efficient because I'd spend so much time trying to find things. And I'm like, how am I going to get anything done? And then someone recommended to me a place of calm. So I got her in and we went through my office and everything got sorted and my paperwork got sorted and everything got tags in front of it and everything gets put back in its right place. And I follow the Mel Robbins 5 second rule. Have you ever heard of it, Nicole?
No, I haven't.
Well, it's a really good TED talk for your audiences to listen to, but the rundown is, you know, when you drop a piece of food on the ground and it's like, oh, 5 seconds, pick it up and you eat it, you know, because germs aren't going to get on it because it's been in there 5 seconds. Well, things in 5 seconds. Are you one of these people that when the alarm goes off, do you flick it off and roll over and go back to sleep? Do you hit that snooze button and then go back to sleep? Because plenty of people do. Why don't you just set the alarm for 5 minutes later and then action and get straight out of bed? Have you ever had an idea and then go, oh, I'll remember that and don't do anything with it? You might think of a new product or a new invention. And you'll hear people say this, oh, I thought of that. Well, you might have thought of it, but you didn't action it. So actioning is something that I do. So I follow the Mel Robbins 5 second rule. So by having someone come in and has decluttered my house, it means that everything has its place. Everything has a label on it because of my memory issues. When I put my keys down, they have to be in the same place. When I put my wallet down, it has to be in the same place. Because then I'm not spending hours upon hours trying to find everything all the time. And that's wasted time. All right, so my house is decluttered. My brain is decluttered. I keep a very good schedule planner that my team has access to so they know where I am, they know what I'm doing, they know where I've got time that they can slot stuff into. And it makes it so much easier to function and to get things done. And I action things straight away. So if I have a new idea and I'm out and about, or in the middle of the night, you know, when you wake up during the middle of the night and like, oh, that's a really great idea. So I will call Siri. Got the phone next to me, so I'm hoping she doesn't click on, and say, make a note of this. And so during the middle of the night, I don't even have to open my eyes. I'll ask her to make a note on it. So then when I wake up in the morning, it's in the notes section. Or when I'm driving, I'll ask her to make a note. When I'm in the shower, I'll ask her to make a note. So I've actioned it and it's written down somewhere. So it's not lost. And I keep a really trusted system on time management. So like I said, with my schedule, but I also keep a notebook. Everything gets written in it. Every daily task. And I keep an A list and a B list. So the A list are all the things that need to be done within a 24-hour period. And the B list is just fillers. And then when that A list, I tick them off and then I keep adding to it. So the night before, before I go to bed tonight, I will look and put things on my A list that need to be done tomorrow.
Wow. You've got great system.
And the things that you don't want to do, the things that you procrastinate and putting off, do them first. Because we spend far too long procrastinating on an item that would have taken us an eighth of the amount of time to do than the amount of time we procrastinate on it. And then quite often what we'll do with that item that we're procrastinating against doing is that we'd build it up bigger than, you know, Mount Everest in our mind, and it was just a little pothole.
So how do you think, have you always had this kind of drive, tenacity and you know, I'm just going to action everything I think of? Has it always been there or did it come into play along the way?
I've been in survival mode for a very, very, very long time. So my backstory, so I like to say my life started again in 2011 when I was diagnosed with MS, but you know, I was three and a half years old when my mum got breast cancer. She was 27 years of age and we got shipped off to live with my grandparents interstate. So for about 6 months, my brother and I, he's 10 months and 3 weeks younger than me, went to live with my nan and my pa. That was the first time that we lived with them, and we ended up living with them 3 times because their mum got MS when she was 33. She got cervical cancer at 40 and she got lung cancer at 49. So I became her primary carer in my late teenage years. Then I grew up in a small country town and I ended up being a single mum, not through choice, but it happened. He walked out when I was 13 weeks pregnant and I went into survival mode. And when you're in survival mode and you're trying to put food on the table, your mindset does change. But I also had a background in multi-level marketing.
Mm.
So I did Amway. Right? And I did, I've done Amway 4 times. Now there's Amway and what used to be Amway. There was straight Amway and there was another one called the International Dream Association, IDA. And I did IDA 3 times. Now it's called Network 21. But IDA had this system of, back in the early 1990s when I was doing it, I think it was about 1989, actually, the first time I joined. I would have been about 18. They had motivational books by Zig Ziglar and How to Win Friends and Influence People. I was reading those books at 18, 19, my friends. Yeah. All right, so that, and then all the multi-level marketing businesses that I've done and party plan businesses that I'd done in my life, you had to learn how to market yourself, or you didn't succeed in those businesses. I ended up as number 4 in Australia in sales for Tupperware, selling $150,000 worth of plastic a year, and that was before they used to ship it out to the customers. This is when my biggest week was just over $19,000 in Tupperware. That's a lot of plastic to pack up. And we had like mountains of Tupperware through the whole house and the kids. I'd say, grab the UFO container. And we had nicknames for all the containers because the kids had to help me bag it all up and then ship it all out. But because of all the systems in place and the motivational stuff that they had, that was the building block then take me to where I am now. And I've been...
It's like your tribe.
Yeah. Well, and it's more than that. It was the foundation. It was the foundation. So not so much the people, but what I learned in those books, what I learned in those tapes that we used to listen to, the cassettes as you were driving along putting them in. What I learned from the conferences, when you got past all the super hype and all of that, the underlying messages of positivity, because it takes far less energy to be positive than what it does to be negative. It takes far less muscles on your face to smile than what it does to frown. I don't have that much energy. There's the spoon theory that, you know, you, Nicole, probably have 50 spoons a day. I have, say, 20 spoons a day. So I have to conserve what I do with my 20 spoons. So even having this podcast talk to you uses so many spoons. Having a shower uses spoons. Eating uses a spoon. And if I use all my 20 spoons and I start using more, well, they come from tomorrow's spoons. So if I have a really big day today, I know that I have to schedule in a quiet day tomorrow. Now, I had 3 intense days over the weekend. And I'm still in deficit from my spoons. So Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday this week have been quiet days. And I haven't done much over here except for some book work. But I haven't been like really out doing too much at all. Caught up with a girlfriend for lunch yesterday and that's been it. So self-care is probably the number one thing.
And I think for me what comes up when you say that is, and I was actually going to ask this question later, but you've pointed me to it now. So when you talk, I get a great sense of awareness, because to have self-care, you have to be aware of yourself. And that was going to be my question for you, is how important is connection to, let me rephrase that. When it comes to resilience, how much is connection required? How does it impact resilience? For example, connection to self or connection to community? How does it really impact resilience?
100%. Because that comes back to asking for help again. I'm actually here tomorrow to do a workshop on self-awareness and resilience. So 100%. You've got to be self-aware on what you're doing and the actions you're doing and what your mental state is. And, you know, how much sleep are you getting? What movement are you doing? The words that you're speaking to yourself, the words that you're speaking to others, what's your tribe like? It all comes into place. It's a bigger picture. And just because you've learned something doesn't mean that you can't learn it a different way or do something differently. You can learn new habits. You can do things differently. It doesn't happen straight away. I mean, it takes 66 days to learn a new habit, but you can do that. You can improve yourself. But again, asking for help is a sign of strength. Don't try and do it by yourself, because you won't be able to. No one has ever built resilience by themselves, ever. Everyone always has had to reach out to someone to help. You know, I've been in counseling since 2012. I still go to counseling, because I know that if my mental health is not on point, then I'd be sitting in the corner rocking. And I believe that it's not my family or friends' responsibility to hear me vent all the time. Can you imagine them sitting there for 13 years having to listen to me vent about having every heart surgery I went through, then going through the 3 cancer diagnoses, and then the 2 blood conditions, and then the domestic violence, and then I found my current partner dead on the floor. You know, don't get me wrong, I sit and talk to them, but the in-depth conversations I don't have with them. I don't feel, this is my personal thing, I don't feel that it's their responsibility to take for me to unload that onto them. So I'd pay someone to do that. I go in there for that 45, 50 minutes and I dump it on them and I feel lighter and I get enlightened by it and then I walk out the door. And then I don't have to talk about it again to anyone else unless I want to. Whereas if I say a lot of this to family and friends, they'll constantly keep bringing it up.
Mm.
Whereas I don't have to when I dump it on someone else that I paid for. And she's got to sit there and listen to me, because without judgment, and that's the thing, I can tell her anything without judgment. Whereas quite often when we're telling family and friends, we feel we're being judged. So we don't say a lot of the things and then we bottle it all up in here and we feel that we can't be honest. We can't be our authentic self. And we don't have anyone to verbally diarrhea it to. So that's been one of my key points, is having someone in my life that I can do that. And, you know, someone say, oh, I say that to my partner. Yeah, but what if your partner's giving you the shits? What if the issue is with your partner? You can't say that to your partner. You need someone else. Oh, I say to my girlfriend, yeah, but are they going to be there for you 100% of the time? So, you know, having a counselor, having someone that is on your side is very key with it.
So you've had a lot of punches.
You could say that.
One way of saying it.
No, I've been through life, Nicole. So can we just reframe this, all right? Because we all have adversities in our life. No one gets through life without having some really good highs and some really good lows. We will all experience both of them. Some of us just have a lot more dips.
So in your dips, how do you not fall into or slip into a state of victimhood?
I don't have the energy. I don't have the energy. Don't get me wrong. When something happens, I'm not my positive self like you see now, but I don't stay in that mindset. So, I mean, when Dean passed away, that hit me really, really hard. What, really? And it still does. I still have really bad days and bad moments. And I mean, it's nearly 20 months from him. But it's getting better and I know that it'll get better. So having that in the back of my mind that not every day is going to be like this. Not every day. And you know, that old cliche that, you know, there's a light at the end of the tunnel. There is. There's always something around the corner. There's always something better around the corner and there will be. So, you know, when something bad happens, out of every bad thing that has happened in my life, there's always been a reaction of something positive, but not immediately. All right, it doesn't happen immediately. So I got MS in the March, and then by, I think it was the August, I picked up a paintbrush for the first time and I learned how to paint. So I'd lost my purpose in life, didn't know what I was going to do, and I started spiraling down. And my neuro said to me, you better find a hobby, you can have a lot of time in your hands. And I went, oh, I've always wanted to learn how to paint, but I'd always been so busy and self-care was not up there that I'd never made time for it. Now, all I had was time, and it still took me 4 months to walk through. So from April through to August, however many months that is, to walk through that art studio door here in Perth. And when I did, I took to it like a duck to water, and 6 months later, I sold my first piece for $300. Now, I went from having zero money myself, I was solely relying on someone else, to all of a sudden, I just sold my artwork. Someone just paid over their hard-earned money to me. I have some purpose back, not just making money again. People stand in front of my artwork and they smile. Isn't that purpose in life? I make other people smile by looking at my artwork. So then I look at everything else. So when I went through my cancer journey and I couldn't bend my fingers or my toes and I couldn't pick up a paintbrush anymore, how was I going to create? Art takes me into that happy zone. How was I going to create? People kept tagging me in on social media on an artist called Iris Scott overseas, and she finger painted. I went, oh, I wonder if I could do that. I could still move my fingers. I just couldn't bend them, so I couldn't hold a pencil or a paintbrush, but I could still move them a bit. And so I taught myself how to finger paint. And now I teach other people finger painting for grown-up workshops. So I couldn't bend my fingers in 2016-17. And now in 2022, I started teaching finger painting for grown-ups. So it took 4 years, but something positive came out of it. So although you're facing an adversity at the moment, something positive will eventually come out of it because you'll grow. When we're faced with adversities, we are forced to think outside the square. We become very complacent in life and we'll, you know, come along at that line. But when we're faced with an adversity, that shakes up our world and our thought patterns. And all of a sudden, you've got to think outside that world. Now, because I was in survival mode for so long, I was constantly thinking, okay, how do I survive? How do I put food on the table? You know, one particular point when my kids were little, I had 4 part-time jobs at once. And I used to do around 250 kilometres a day on country roads just to get to work. And the only thing that changed was my name badge. So I'd swap from one name badge to the next name badge to the next name badge. And why? Because I was in survival mode and I needed to put food on the table. So out of an adversity, that happened. But the experience that I got from those four jobs and the time management that I got from those four jobs then helped me to the person that I am today. So look back in what you've done in your life and think, what have I learned? What were the pivotal moments in my life? What have I learned from those pivotal moments? Was there an idea that I had that came, that's come out of those pivotal moments? How can I action that now in my own life? And that's how I ended up with seven businesses. So when I went through the cancer journey as well, people wanted to know what made me me. How are you so positive? What have you done? What's different about you? We want to know your secret. And you know what, Nicole? Oh, I didn't know. I don't know. I just get out of bed and I live me. I don't know. So I actually had to sit down with someone and break it all down. And then once I worked out what made me me, so, you know, through my counselor, but also working with a coach, okay, what makes me me, then all of a sudden resilience mindset was born. And at that point, I was an MS ambassador for Victoria. So I was going out and educating people for free on what it was like to live with a disability until someone turned around and said to me, you should be paid for this. You've got a story there. And I'm like, oh. Okay, I've always wanted to be a keynote speaker. So out of adversity, something else has happened. So now instead of just educating the MS community, I educate internationally of what it's like to live with a disability, what it's like to come through having adversities and how to thrive from it. Because my number one motto that I live by is time is the most precious commodity. You cannot buy it, sell it, reuse it, borrow it, or steal it. So be careful on what you spend it on and who you spend it on. Are you procrastinating? Are you in the wrong tribe? If you are, you and only you have the ability to change. You cannot wait for someone else to do it for you.
You have so much wisdom wrapped up in that. I feel like I could pull apart each little bit and put them on T-shirts, you know.
I've got T-shirts coming out as well. So, you know, they'll be available in Resilience Mindset. And we're bringing out a thing called the Moxie Effect as well. So that's a
series. Of course you do. It doesn't surprise me.
It's a series of books coming out. But I'm bringing out a book this year called Moxie. And it's all about my story. And it'll be out in around July. As well. So all the backstories and the pivotal moments that have made me, me, and then there'll be a keynote about Moxie. But, you know, at the moment I'm out talking about from being diagnosed to, you know, leader, Geelong Business Leader of the Year. And from what we can gather, I'm the first disabled person ever to win that award against able-bodied.
Wow.
People. So
congratulations.
Thank you. So, you know, to prove that just because you've become disabled doesn't mean that your life stops. It just takes on a different meaning and the way that you've learned things before. I can't learn that way anymore. I used to be a fast learner, a fast reader. I used to be able to, you know, whiz off my times tables. Well, I can count a little bit now, but I tell you what, those timetables are gone. I can't read music anymore. That whole part of my brain is gone. But it doesn't mean that I stop learning. It just means I've had to find a different way to learn things. And I've outsourced by having people on my team to help me. So I have Susie who helps me with, you know, learning heaps of different things. When I don't understand something, rather than sitting there going, oh, I don't understand that and falling into a blubbering mess, she'll sit there and explain it. And she'll explain it not just once, not twice, could be 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 times before I'm like, okay, I get that now. Like trying to learn Google folders, oh my God, that's taken me 2 years. And I still don't know it all. that's still like, how do I do that again? How do I do that? How do I do that? But I'm not afraid to ask for help. Because if I want to get anywhere in life, I need to ask for help. Going to the airport, I ask for help. I wear the disability sunflower lanyard that tells people that I've got hidden disabilities. So people then recognize, oh, she may need help, rather than trying to struggle. It makes life easier.
Yeah. So do you, I mean, I know a lot of people that could, should, but won't wear that label. They won't say, I need the help. I don't, there's almost shame around it. Like,
because they haven't.
I can't. Yeah.
So I wrote an article, I penned an article for Mamma Mia about Christina Applegate, Selma Blair and myself all having MS. So if you go back, that was in December 2022. And Selma Blair's accepted that she's got MS. I've accepted that I've got MS. But Christina Applegate is still going through her grieving process and she's at the anger stage. I'll never accept that I've got it. Now, you can put the energy into fighting that you don't have it and fight it, or you can accept that you've got something like this or something is in your life, but it doesn't mean that you have to like it. There's a difference. There's a difference of accepting something and liking it or not liking it. So I accept that I have MS, but I don't like that I've got MS. And when you accept something into your life and that you need help because of that, it frees up everything. Frees up space in here because you're not spending all that energy and that negativity and that anger and what that's actually doing to your nervous system and your body in fighting it constantly and draining you. And then what you're actually doing by fighting it all the time in the anger is that you're projecting that onto other people without even realizing your subconscious is doing that. So when you get to the point of acceptance of what's happened in your life, then it makes it easier to cope and easier to do things and you're a lot calmer. And you get shit done.
Another t-shirt. So obviously this podcast is called Connectedly and we talk a lot about connection and happiness.
Yep.
What is happiness to you?
Happiness to me is living my authentic self. Living my authentic self and having my tribe. My tribe is international. My tribe is not just in Geelong. I've got people all around the world now that I've met that, you know, my best friend lives in South Australia and we connect daily via Zoom. And I met her in Ireland on a writing retreat. So happiness is having positivity in your life, but not having positivity porn either. All right, so allowing yourself to go through the emotions. Happiness is feeling that warmth inside of yourself, wanting to get out of bed, wanting to do things in life. Happiness is helping as many people on this planet as I possibly can with my story. I believe that everything that has gone wrong with me, with my story, gives other people hope. We could all do with some hope in our lives. I've got a book coming out on hope. That'll be out in the next couple of months, a children's picture book. Hang out for that one. That's one of the biggest projects that I've been working on with another organization. And I've illustrated and written this children's book and I'm pretty bloody proud of that one. That makes me happy. Sunflowers make me happy. My dog makes me happy. Pansy, my puppy, she makes me happy. So I don't live by myself. I live with Pansy and I live with Smirnoff, my green frog. Having pets make me... No, I don't have a drinking problem. I don't actually drink. That's Murdoch Midori and Gutso, but Midori and Gutso passed away. But my grandkids make me happy. You know, for them, they now there's quite a few of them that FaceTime me, and I think that it's their parents ringing me, and then they ring me and go, "Hi, Nan," and I'm like, "Oh, my heart, my ovaries." That makes me happy. That makes me do what I do. You know, that there's nothing better than that. You know, having the freedom of choice, we live in such an amazing country. That makes me happy. There's so much that makes me happy. It's so, so much. I'm happy to still be here, you know, to be living my authentic life. What you see on camera is what I am in the real world. Hang a day with me and you'll see that I'm just me. So, you know, you'll see some people that what they put on in front of the camera is not who they are in the real world. But no, my house makes me happy. If you drive past my house, Nicole, you'll understand why. My house is bright lime green on the outside, turquoise and mauve, with a 5'8" giraffe in the front yard that I made. That makes me happy. And a 6-meter sausage dog and a community library out the front that people are always swapping books in. That makes me happy. You know, look in your own lives. What makes you happy? And if you can't find anything, don't sit back and whinge and bitch and wait for someone to make you happy. I learned long ago, don't wait for a man to make you happy. So many women sit there and wait for a man to make them happy in a relationship. Oh, I need a relationship to make me happy. I call bullshit on that. You might have to edit some of this out. I call bullshit on that. Because you don't. You've got to be happy in your own life first to attract the right tribe into your life. Read books. Watch funny movies. They make me happy. I don't watch horror movies. I don't watch the news anymore. I control what comes in on my social media feeds. All right. If someone on my social media, let's say Stalkbook, Facebook, is not aligning with my values, and every time they come up, I get that, oh, here they go again. Some people, I might do that to some people on their social media feeds. It's easy. There's a little button that says unfollow. Just unfollow them. They'll never know. All right. That makes me happy. What I'm seeing on my social media feed, I'm fueling my mind. I watch TEDx talks. That makes me happy. I educate myself. That makes me happy. Yeah. I watch funny movies. If I'm watching a movie and it's not sitting well with me, I don't watch the end. I turn it off. That makes me happy, rather than watch to the end and go, oh, that's really unsettling. Yeah, no, and I'm unsettled now for the next 3 or 4 days, or it keeps coming back to haunt me. I've learned to turn it off. Don't need to watch the end of it. Buying clothes makes me really, really happy. Probably too happy. Weightlifting makes me really, really happy. I compete in strongman events. Even as a disabled person, I've won a couple of titles. Winning awards makes me really, really happy. Right, to show other people that anything is still possible out there. That makes me happy. Being in the media makes me happy. Doing podcasts makes me happy. So much.
Thank you, because I can tell that everything about you that you're sharing, it is actually, it is sharing the joy. It's contagious. So thank you for doing that. It's truly a gift that you have, and I think it's absolutely beautiful. I would love just to finish with a quick fire round, if that's okay.
Yep.
What is your favorite book?
Oh, Can't Hurt Me, David Goggins. Listen to the audio because it's more like a podcast in between the chapters and you'll learn far more.
Ooh, I like that insider tip. What are you trying to unlearn?
To be kinder to myself, that I'm not good enough.
Wow. I wouldn't have thought that one for you, because you do so much, you know, and you seem so brilliantly tapped in.
I grew up with a narcissistic mother and I was never good enough. So I've spent a long time and I'm still not quite there yet, but I'm a lot better than what I was.
Best advice about happiness that you've ever been given?
Make yourself happy. Don't wait for someone to make you happy.
If you could wave your fairy wand, what would you change about the world?
Equality and inclusion.
Tell us one practical tool that we can put into practice today that will help us to be more resilient and happy.
Ask for help.
That is absolutely beautiful. You have hit the nail on the head, and I have to just, for everybody that's listening, thank you, thank you, thank you. You truly are a beacon of light and just a gift of joy and humour. So thank you so much.
You're welcome. It's been a pleasure to be on here today, Nicole.
Thank you. Well, I am feeling so inspired. So here's the takeaways. Finding strength in adversity. Despite facing significant health challenges, including MS and cancer, Justine has found ways to grow stronger and find happiness. She teaches the importance of acceptance and finding the silver lining so that you can let go of the anger and move forward with a smile on your face. The power of asking for help. Justine asks for help and says that it's a sign of strength and not weakness. Whether it's through professional support, community, or friends, seeking assistance is absolutely crucial for building resilience and coping with life's challenges. The importance of self-care and delegation. Effective time management, delegating tasks, and prioritizing self-care are vital for maintaining mental and physical well-being. Justine has a strict approach to managing her time, her health, her energy, businesses, and personal life, and it's one that allows her to maximize her time and live a happy and fulfilling life. Cultivating resilience. Justine's journey illustrates that resilience is not just about bouncing back, but also bouncing forward. It involves learning from experiences, embracing support systems, and continually moving towards personal growth and fulfillment. Thank you so, so much for being here and connecting with us. Until next week, stay in your heart and remember, you are loved and you are worthy. Take care. Bye.